quite a lot. But, you know, it's all conditioning in a lot of ways. There's no justification for somebody not wearing a seatbelt. Zero. I've heard every story in the world, just like telling a smoker he ought to stop. I've heard all the stories. But if you walk up to a highway patrolman who sees that every day and you ask him, should I wear a seatbelt or should I not, and he'll have the statistics there. And the statistics, you know, I liken it to going to Las Vegas and betting on something and say your odds of surviving, we'll say they're 90% with a seatbelt, which I doubt if it's that high. But they're only about 10% that you're going to win. Why wouldn't you wear the seatbelt? I can't for the life of me understand that.
It never was an issue with me at all. Of course, nowadays they ding, ding, ding if you don't buckle them. And I've got a friend that won't wear his. And we'll be going down the road, and I said, you know, not only are you dangerous, but that noise is driving me crazy.
Well, I was never so proud in my life. One day, I told Amy, I let her trade my old 55 first series Chevrolet truck. It was really a beauty. I let her trade it in on a Datsun truck. It was newer, anyways, the guy wanted it, and I said, well, I won't trade you, because it was a kid about 18 years old, and I said, unless you ask your dad. So he went home, and he brought his dad back, and his dad said, Tom, that's what he wants. And I said, well, I haven't got no money. I can't pay you anything to boot. And I said, I know your vehicle's worth more. He says, it don't matter. It's his, and he can spend it the way he wants. And she bought that truck. Well, one day, Bernice and me once saw this girl get out of the truck out in the front yard and slam the door and walk off. And I told Amy that I'd pay for her gas and give her a credit card and pay for the insurance and pay for any upkeep on the truck all the way through college if she wanted to stay at home. But the rule was, if I catch you goofing off or doing something I don't think, and this was when she was in high school, and doing something that you know was wrong, or if I catch somebody in that truck without a seatbelt on, I said, the keys are mine. And that girl wouldn't put on a seatbelt, and Amy told her to get out and walk, and that's what she did.
I have people that don't follow the rules, or they're cutting up in the car. When I was in high school, I was on the tennis team, and I had a crowd of guys in the car, you know, and one guy was just cutting up so rowdy, I couldn't hardly drive. I said, now, son, you need to calm down, or I'm going to set you out. You ain't going to set me out. Well, I hit the brakes and pulled over, and I said, get out of the car. You can't hold it. I said, get out of my car. And we were out in the middle of nowhere, and I left him. And we weren't real good friends after that, but I had my life.
It's, you know, it's conditioning. It's like anything else, and you just get used to it, and you do it. And I feel naked, man, if I don't put on a seatbelt. And I've heard other people, oh, my buddy got killed in the car, and it was because he had a seatbelt on. Well, yes, that's possible. But what's the odds compared to the other way around? And you can't talk common sense to them.
You can fix, you can't fix stupid. What's that saying?
Well, there ain't no vaccine they come up with lately for stupid. There ain't no pill for stupid. Yeah, I had a friend of mine, and he drove semi-truck. He would not, absolutely. We about got in a fight one day. I said, you're in the company truck, and I had a company truck. And I said, the rule is you put a belt on. He would not put a belt on. And wasn't a whole lot I could do about it. I wasn't going to turn him in, but I had a lady The only accident I think I'd ever been in my life up to that time, we went down and serviced at the laboratory a motor, and we're coming back, and I went across Broadway. Well, luckily, there was a policeman standing on the corner that day, and I knew him. And this lady blatantly ran through the red light and hit the company truck. And, I felt bad about that. And John, he didn't have a seatbelt on. And his knee went into the dash and made a big dent in the dash. And he didn't break the windshield with his head, but he come pretty close. We was only running probably 15, 20 miles an hour when she ran that stop sign, or a stop light. But Mickey Powell saw her running, so I was in the clear. And boy, I was nervous about that.
Get hurt in a hurry, you got to be real careful. You sure do. While I'm downtown passing a building that a guy used to own, used to be a hardware store down here many years ago, and back in the day, I sold insurance for about 3 years with my daddy. And, I'm not interested. Some guy trying to knock on my window and get money. I sold insurance, and I went and showed him a nice policy, and he said, I really like this. And I came back about three times trying to sell him, and he said, I just don't know why, but I just don't want to do this right now. He had plenty of money. It wasn't the problem. He just, I don't know. He just didn't do it. So, you know, I backed off. I was a nice guy. And he called me about 3 months later, and he said, Phil, can I still get that policy? I've been diagnosed with cancer. And I said, well, no, sir, you can't. I'm so sorry. And, of course, it took his life. And he called me again later, and he said, I just want to apologize to you because you were trying to do your job, and you were real nice, and you should have been more forceful, but that would have been a great check for my wife, but she's not going to get it now.
Sad situation, Bill, but you did your part, and that's the situation. Life, it's got a few chuck holes in that road, as we used to say up there in Kansas. Well, I just measured this case on my cell phone, and this new case is 2.94 inches, and the old case is 3.10 inches. I just don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, I've gotten to where I get the kinds that are horizontal, like put on my belt, and I order one for a phone bigger, because I've had a couple of them I've had to send back. I never could get the phone in. I understand they stretch a little bit, and they tell you, you know, ram it down in there, and it'll get easier. But I don't want to have to take both hands. I want to be able to get it in and out one hand, and it be convenient. They're trying to save a billionth of an inch of leather, or fake leather, and it's just ridiculous. I've had to send several of them back.
Oh, and it's an iPhone 11, and I looked at the specifications on Amazon, and it was a lot cheaper than going down here to Verizon, of course. I think they even had the Verizon one. It's driving me nuts. I don't like carrying it in my back pocket or my shirt pocket. It's a heavy phone. And it says Precision Premium Accessories AR3, and it said it was for this phone and three or four other ones that size, the XR and the X11, and I don't know what all. I'll get it straightened out. It just now, the mail was real late today, and it just now come in, so I'm like you. That's what I like, a hard case, and I want it to go on my belt. And I want to be able to turn it sideways if I want it that way. Sometimes I just hang it from my pocket, but I don't like it in my pocket. I don't like carrying it in my shirt pocket. And you get used to something, it's hard for you to change.
Next time I see you. And it's also got some places for some business cards, and that's real convenient. I've carried them for years in my wallet, and they get bent. They look like, you know, you don't want to even give them away sometimes, I don't like a little folder, I mean a little case that you put in your pockets, too much bulk, but there's room for, you know, 7 or 8 cards there in the phone case, and you never know they're there, but you got them when you need them.
7-0-QR. I wanted to ask you a question, Phil. When Bill answered that question about the full-size Carolina Wyndham the other night, he said it was omnidirectional up to, and you know what? I erased that message from you, and I was going to write that down. And do you remember what the rest of the explanation said about after, I think it was after 40 meters or something, or above it?
I'll re-forward it to you. I'm driving, but I'll do that in a little bit. Basically, the bottom line is it's not high enough on 40, 80, and 160 to matter. If you raise the center support, you know, I asked him about a little extra height, but he said it's more critical at 20 and above that it be flat. So he said if you can't raise all three ends significantly and you're already up 40 or 50 feet, he said, that I wouldn't touch it. But on 48 and 160, it had multiple lobes and was pretty much omnidirectional. I was going to change mine a little bit because I figured it was like a dipole with the two big round lobes off either side, broadside. So I was going to make my antenna a little more broadside to the east, but I can't move it but about 30 degrees, and according to him, it's not going to matter anyway at the height that's at.
That's the main gist of it. Yeah, I talked to Kansas on it, and it's pointed, it runs from northeast to southwest, and the Superloop is running from north to south. And they couldn't tell any difference in my signal up there hardly at all up in Kansas. And that was on 40 meters and I think 80.
It's a good antenna. The only reason I didn't put one up is I didn't have the real estate or the height to make it 160. But that's a perfectly respectable antenna. In fact, at my QTA, it's just the way the conditions were the night we talked. You were a little bit stronger on the Superloop.
No, I haven't figured out why that thing won't tune at 7.005 down in that area, above 160 watts. If you go above that, it'll trip the amplifier every time. And Ariel come out and looked at it, and he couldn't figure it out. One person said that they had a ballon that saturated on them. But Jim and E, Phil, these wire design ballons, I just find that hard to believe. And I checked it when I renewed it with that silky wire that, we put up. However, I looked at their website the other day, and they shut it completely down. I was going to order another current ballon for the Superloop just to see if that was, in fact, the case. But you couldn't even put in an order.
Still there, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. It says they were a small operation, kind of like it did you, and that they just weren't accepting any orders at all, not even pre-orders.
Yeah. Well, hams can get testy. You know, well, you took my order. Where's my whatever? You know, I guess they're doing it the right way, and they got the reputation when they get caught up, they'll open it up again. But I think their main thing is not that they can't turn them out, but they can't get those gray boxes of sufficient quality.
Well, I'm not worried about it because it'll talk anywhere else and I can drive it as many watts as I want. And I have the Carolina Wyndham, which I consider it just a little bit better antenna, so it's not a big concern. I just thought that'd be a good test and a nice piece of equipment to have as a spare.
Well, I need to get another antenna up. I'm really happy with this one, but, you know, things happen and weather and this and that, so I don't have the space to put up another one of this length. It would have to be for 80 and above, or maybe even a super loop, but I want to get two antennas up.
One of them towers you got, and put a log periodic on it like Bob did. I would not buy the Stepper IR. I don't care how much they brag about them. It's a dynamic antenna, and I've seen them go bad with those stepper motors and stuff inside of them. And the log periodic is static, and that ain't going to happen to it. That's just an old-timer's opinion.
Well, you know, Bob likes his log periodic, but he thinks other things are better. I don't know what he said he was going to put up in the place of it. I don't know.
He did that to me, so I couldn't answer that, Phil. I'm sure he did to you, but he never did say that to me. And the gain on that is about as much gain as you can get off of anything. Now, Bob's big time, so he might be wanting to do the same thing as K4SV. He's a big influence with Bob, I'm sure. And those Stepper IRs are great antennas. But do you ever see those little copper strips and that inside that the stepper motor runs back and forth? Stop and think about it. If you get a lightning discharge, the possibilities there.
Yeah, I've seen it. Well, I might be wrong on what Bob told me, and I thought one time he was going to take it down. So he must have thought something was better. So I don't know. But, yeah, I've seen those little copper strips. We need to talk about what to do on mine, lightning protection. Right now I've got a coax switch outside. I can just go switch and it shunts the entire antenna straight to the ground rod, both ends of it, on each side of the balun, the braid and the center conductor. But I don't know. I feel like I'll just disconnect the whole thing if there's going to be lightning this summer. You know, we've had a ham club member that lost his house to fire because lightning struck his antenna.
The good Lord can pick that out and decide which one gets it, I guess. Well, you've seen what I had. I had a piece of quarter-inch bus bar, and it's grounded. All the grounds go to the same ground as the house goes to, and I have a whole house lightning arrestor, which is only about $50 to $75, and it just snaps in, and it's just nothing more than a big MOV, I'm pretty sure. And also the Alpha Delta lightning arrestors, Phil, you could have one of those. But when it's storm season, I just take it loose from the coax switch in the house here, and I plug it into a piece of RG8 that's running over to that 1-inch bus bar that goes to the ground, and it's completely isolated from anything in the house, you might say, radios and all. These sort of like this. I used to have a buddy, and he'd take his out and stick it in a mason jar until that mason jar got shattered one day. He also had a rotator that got fragmentated by lightning. He hit his big 6-meter beam and come in. And so he just disconnects, and that's as good a way as any.
Yeah, but late at night, you don't want to go outside and disconnect. You know, I'd wind up leaving it half the time and going to work the next morning, and in the summertime in a lightning storm in the midday or late afternoon, I'll get it straightened out, though. Well, listen, somebody else probably wants to use this repeater, and we need to give them that opportunity. And I'm on Roper Mountain Road about to pull into my parents' house, so you have talked to me all the way, Tom, and it's been a pleasure. So you tie the ribbons on it, and I'll see you on down the logbook. W4 never give up.
There's been a repeater coming in here from up near where the kids live, near West Bloomfield, Michigan. And it identified clearly N8, I'm downstairs now, I think it was CL, stroke repeater. Oh, hell, that was happening. Anyways, really enjoyed it, Phil, and I didn't mean to go outside and do it. Undo it in the back of your radio and run it over to the ground, or stick it in a ball mason jar below eye level. See you later. W4NGU and 0GR73.
I got to go, but just saying hello. I hadn't seen you in a good while, but y'all doing a good job on the repeater. W4NGU. Don't know that we've been doing much, but thank you anyway.
Was that repeater coming in so clear at NACL, I think it was, early this afternoon? It was IDN. Stroke repeater. I'm just curious. I was sitting here trying to measure this stupid phone case in 0TR.
Hey, Tom, apparently I'm actually in a bad spot.
Well, I got a phone call, got an answer why. It's in 0TR.
And I didn't hear any of your last transmission.
Well, I got a phone call and I have to get off of here. Steve just called me. So, that's all right, Steve. I'll sign with you for now, Wyatt. You're in a bad place. It's in 0TR.
Right after I get out of that spot. Anyway, we'll catch you later. KJ4, CTD Mobile.
Can anybody tell me where this repeater is located?
Repeater is located approximately 400 feet above ground level on Caesar's Head, South Carolina.
CTD in 0TR. I hadn't talked to you in a while, Wyatt, and I about forgot your call sign. 73, I have a little bit of this forgetfulness. Anyways, I heard a repeater coming in, just clear as a bell there, two or three times this afternoon. It was from around the Detroit area. I just wondered why it was coming in. It was IDing in CW.
Some VHF skip going on today or something. I don't really have a clue. I haven't heard it. This is actually the first time I've actually had this side of the radio actually with the volume up today. I've been on the other side of the radio with the volume, up instead, because it's been a working in the field day kind of day. KJ4, CTD Mobile.
GR. Roger. Well, I don't know. I was just curious. NACL stroke repeater is what it was IDing, I think. I wrote it down upstairs and don't have it. I'm downstairs now. And I got a couple of cell phone carriers and I don't think they're going to fit. And that's what I was doing when Phil jumped in there a minute ago to holler at you. Right, I hollered back at you. It seemed like they're about 20,000ths off with their injection molding.
I know I've been a bit rare DX. I just haven't wanted to talk on the radio, to be honest. I'm playing with all sorts of things and doing things. And showed up to work on to inspect a transmitter today. And dang it, the thing was not working. Nobody bothered to tell me ahead of time, so I didn't bring the manual with me. Whoops.
Getting you ought to have that all memorized by now.
Oh, yeah, but see, this is a new transmitter that's 10 years newer than the one that they replaced, and this one was built in 1990.
Been there and done that. Only in the machine tool industry. I used to have blueprints that were actually blue.
No. And, if they'd only spent like $2,000 more, they could have gotten one of these transmitters that actually had integrated circuits in it. Which would have been nice, It's a little bit more, a little bit harder to think about, but, it at least you're dealing only with one set of voltages, not like 12.
have to deal with a power supply on a different machine tools, but in particular one on a deflect machine tools. It had a minus 5, a plus 5, a minus 12, a plus 12, a minus 24, plus 24. I don't remember all of them, really. Oh, that was a pain. So all discrete components instead of ICs. Now, that is getting back there a ways.
Generation, it was, they used resistors for timing the Morse code. This one's a little bit smarter than that, but not by a whole lot. I have some kind of low, I think something in my low voltage power supply is screwed up. I got 72 volts on the big capacitor and no 12, no 5 either side. Matter of fact, the only thing I have is the 72 on the big cap in the back, in the power supply. That's it. Don't have any other voltages.
SCR in there that crowbarred those and blow the fuse on it.
They do, but without the schematic, I ain't sticking my fingers in there.
But don't feel bad. I used to have to work on variable speed drives on DC drives that had 600 volts on the anodes of them, and then the fields were 240 volts, and then there was voltage regular tubes, and then things like 6SN7s and all the different triodes and pentodes and all of that stuff, and in summation they would fire a thyrotron in order to control the field voltage on that anywhere from 40 to 100 horse DC motor.
I would have stuck around a little bit longer to work on it today. Because you can do a lot with voltmeter, check the fuses and whatnot, but there are no lights on site, and it was starting to get dark. So, yes, I can clock with the best of them. And I'd rather do that and go home and get the manual, come back tomorrow and do it.
Nothing wasn't, what?
Beacon.
Well, Omni?
If you want to use regular English, yes.
I don't know a whole lot about that. You know that. You're the expert. But, yeah. And then I was trying to... They was talking about... and I thought about you yesterday. I was telling W4DJW about this system on... three different airplanes. One of them's a Cirrus. It's a small jet. One of them's, I think, the Pilatus, comes in down there to airport all the time. It's got those forward canards and the rear pusher props. And they have an auto-landing system on those now. And I think it would work with GPS or RNAV. And I thought you said RNAV was kind of outdated and they don't have it anymore. Is that a fact? In fact, I hear them downtown. Court scene, they're going to make an RNAV approach occasionally. Explain that.
Still very much alive. They don't use it a whole lot. They prefer to use GPS, generally speaking. And I was just talking to the controllers over at Donaldson. It's, you're not allowed to make a Category 3 landing with GPS only. You have to have an ILS for it. But Category 3 is basically you can't see the runway at all. So, there's a lot of reasons for that, mainly that, GPS is actually easier to jam than the ILS signal.
That too. And I didn't think that the GPS signals were that easily jammed, but I've heard that over and over. I know they're wanting to do it in the prison systems because the... pirating of the cell phones,
By the time the GPS signal gets to your receiver, you're talking milliwatts. You're not talking full wattage. I think it's something like 50 milliwatts at the receiver in your vehicle. So, that's fairly straightforward to overcome, especially given that you're a ham, and I'm sure you've transmitted 25-watt PSK. in various places, and, you know, if you ever watch the Cubans transmitting, it just splatters everywhere.
Probably not. I hear a CO signal coming from down there. It's going chirp, chirp, chirp on every key of the straight keys they use, and otherwise, it's pitiful, the spurious harmonics.
The harmonics are a form of jamming, if you really want to think about it that way. And all you have to do is override the GPS signal, you know, wash the information out, and then you have nothing.
I figured it'd be, microvolts, rather than even milliwatts, the signal coming down, the footprint of the satellite. It's just out of my realm of knowledge, I guess. I just figured it would be a whole lot less than that. But, I flew with a guy down here several years ago, and he had GPS. That's pretty neat stuff.
I'm fairly okay with it being used for, distant flight and stuff. I don't trust it in a high-precision, life-critical situation.
Interesting to me, with your knowledge, because I would have thought that had been the go-to thing whenever, like, a car, nowadays, they've opened up the military codes and that, and it'll put you within a few feet of your destination, so it would seem like that would be the go-to thing.
Speaking, it's 1 meter resolution at that point, or I shouldn't say resolution. It'll put you within 1 meter of a spot, accurately. However, with a nuke, 1 meter is the same thing as 100 meters. But when you're talking about landing, do you really want to be 3 feet below the pavement?
Yeah, we landed down here one night in a thunderstorm on Delta, and I asked the pilot as we were leaving the airport. I said, "Where did you break out at?" And he said, "It was rough, Wyatt. And you got to understand, I've landed on carriers and in weather, and I was concerned. Put it that way. Of course, I was getting older then too." And he says, "I broke out at 250 feet," and he kind of smiles.
250 feet is a Cat 3A. Cat 3B is so-called auto land. You don't have to see anything, and it'll land the plane for you.
If somebody wants to jump in. Yeah, this was at GSP, and he did a fine job, and it was really bucking around, let me tell you. And I don't know. It just kind of concerned me with all the thunder and lightning. And, it was pouring down rain, and he made that approach, and he didn't waver. He just come right on down. But they must have a phenomenal approach system down there at GSP.
It's got to be at least a Cat 3A. I don't know if they have 3B there or not. Charlotte and Atlanta both have Cat 3Bs. I don't know exactly. I'd have to look at the chart and see what they had. KD4 CTD Mobile.
Well, I noticed them last year down at the end of runway 2. On the end of 22, right there by Highway 14. And of course that varies with the variation in the North Pole up there, shall we say. The magnetic fields, they change them occasionally, but right now it's 4 and 22. But they did a considerable amount of work down there, and they already had the good lighting system with the strobes and all. But they worked down there for several months, right there at the end of the runway, like where the threshold beacon would be. I guess it's where it would be at.
exactly what they were doing, but I never did. So I don't know exactly what they changed down there.
That was, but at any rate, no call sign, no acknowledgement. Well, we're just thankful as a world to have an airport like that around here, with an 11,000-foot runway and all. People don't realize how lucky they are, and boy, they've did a lot of expansion. The only thing down there I don't like, and I do like in one way, is Bernice and I used to go down there and park by the executive airport, and there was a nice spot to park right there, and you can watch them take off and land. And now they build a multi-million dollar emergency vehicle place there, which they needed that. And but it ticks me off. I can't, you know, there's no place to park down there now.
We were at GSP off of Highway 80. Nice big spot there right before the Windshear Tower.
Tower there. You know, I heard them call out the other day. They were detecting wind shears of 90 miles an hour. Where was that at, and the wind was real high. Must have been last week or so. But they was warning the pilots, and I didn't know they had a tower for wind shear, but I know they could detect it, but I didn't know it took a tower. Yeah, I know where you mean out there, Wyatt, and it's occupied sometimes. FedEx is not too bad out in that region. We went out there to see the Russian Antonov one time when he was unloading, and but not too many good places to park in there where you can really, really watch the planes.
Downtown, I think there's a couple of spots on the north end, and then the other one's down at the Runway Cafe, and that's pretty much it for over there. And Donaldson's got one by the glide slope, and anywhere at Donaldson, you can just about get to almost anywhere you want to sit there and watch them.
Boy, I wish I knew where. I'd love to go down there and see that. I think they're still servicing some of the P3s, and I know the P8s come in down here at GSP quite often, and C-17s doing practices, and we see them when we go down to Dodgers, but I don't know how to get down to a place where you can look at Donaldson.
You Donaldson, or what?
Wyatt, I think we've only been down there one time in 10 years since we moved down here. I think you can go out Wade Hampton to get to the Taco Bell and hang a left there. What road is that, Bernice? I forget which road it is and go down towards Donaldson. But I think you know about where we live up here between Robinson and Cunningham. What would be, can you tell me in layman's terms a way to get down there?
Without making use of the interstate, go Wade Hampton to 291 Pleasantburg, and then run out until you cross 85, and let's see here, and then you got to drive, let's see here, from the Spink station that's right there, maybe another 2 miles, and you'll see a road that just kind of bends off to the left there, and that'll take you straight to the front of Donaldson.
It's like a civilian airport there, or is it all military now?
And then you do have a whole collection of, actually I think almost all the services are represented, and then you have Lockheed that's on the other side of the field.
You are, well, thank you. That sounds really interesting. We'll have to try that, and it'd be a nice ride for us, means we're all cooped up with this COVID stuff. However, Bernice and I got our first shot the other day, about February 5th, I guess. But are they flying any of those F-16s down there yet?
Here all day, and to be honest, I really have no idea what was flying. Apparently, I missed something really special because apparently they had a C-130 or something that was being escorted by a whole flight of AH-60 helicopter refuelers, and they were refueling them all along the way. Totally missed it. Oh, well.
I didn't know that was possible either. shoot. Now, was the C-130 refueling the helicopters, or I thought you said vice versa?
That was my understanding from the controllers. The helicopters were actually refueling the C-130, and I was like, but helicopters don't fly that fast, do they? And he's like, C-130 had his flaps full out, and he was down at, you know, basically runway speeds, and they were refueling them, and I'm like, holy cow, that's just bizarre.
That really is. And I wouldn't have thought the fuel capacity on those AH-60s would have been that much. I think they, I'm going to guess they probably top out 160, 180. Install on the 130s probably 140 in it or 160.
The controllers were saying, and they're all, you know, ex-military, but they were saying the 60s top out at around 160, I think. And apparently it was a flight of 10 helicopters in the C-130, so that's just bizarre. I never considered, I mean, normally you think about it the other way around, the C-130 is fueling up a bunch of helicopters, but I never considered the other way.
And either. Well, we got a new gentleman on here, and I can't remember his call right now. He used to fly the KC-135 for many, many years, and he's really interesting to talk to. I got his call written down upstairs, but the only time I ever really saw him doing that around here was over to Lyman Lake one day, and I actually got a picture of it someplace, and there was the Ospreys were being refueled by a C-130, and there was three of the Ospreys behind that C-130, and I can't remember if they had multiple in-flight refueling nozzles or it was just one. I just don't really remember, but I'd never seen an Osprey before, and they were all flying right behind that C-130.
I saw KC-130 refueling two helicopters at a time. The helicopters doing the evacuation. They were flying right over my house doing the refuel, N6 CLX.
D-Mobile. And Tom, you talk about the Ospreys. I was down near Buford, and they were actually doing practice landings, and they were doing the full tilt rotor thing. It was actually kind of cool.
Yes, I should say so. Those turboprops, those blades on those things are humongous. They're big. N6 CLA, yeah, this is Tom. Go ahead and take one.
Caught you going to work, now you caught me going home. Yeah, I was just saying that got back to the house after Hurricane Katrina, lived down in the New Orleans area, and the 130s were flying over the house, trailing two hoses, one out each end of the wings, and they were refueling two helicopters at a time.
You'd think they were actually refueling these three Ospreys from one, and that, so I guess that's possible. Our nephew used to fly C-130s from St. Joseph, Missouri. He actually flew in the Gulf War. He was a command pilot before he retired as a major up there. But they didn't do refueling, however, but that's how he wound up. Now he flies the 787, Mike, and I envy him. Go ahead, Wyatt.
I'm just putting down the road, KJ-4C today.
A lot of the... I guess the approach systems and that for the airports around, I don't know exactly what. And he's a very, very smart individual, Mike, so don't let him kid you. And he also does a lot for the repeater up here, to my knowledge. Go ahead, Mike.
Break for the people coming in on there. As slow as these people are driving, they're all driving IFR. That's all there is.
And I'm not down at the interstate anymore. KT4, CTD. Jeez, I almost forgot my call sign. I gotta quit being so rare, DX.
Yeah, Wyatt. Well, I'm gonna go, guys. I haven't even opened the mail. It come late, and I was fiddling with this new case for my I-11, and it's not fitting right, and I'm annoyed by that, but I heard some good people on here and wanted to get on and enjoy it, talk to Jerry, talk to W4NGU, Phil. Really enjoyed it all, and I'll let you guys take it. Wyatt, thanks for all the information and getting my P-Brain updated. And 73's to you. I'll let you take it, Wyatt. KJ4CTD and 0TR. 73's to you too, Mike.
Hey, Tom, that was good talking to you again. And, let's go ahead and pass it over to Mike. KJ4CTD.
Yeah, I have nothing more to add. All I got to say is thank goodness for my exit at Highway 14. So I avoid all of that craziness on 85. I go down towards, we live in, well, the address is Greer, but we live in Greenville County. It's just off of Batesville Road, Batesville 14, Pelham, that whole little area there.
Oh, okay. You keep coming north and you'll eventually get to me. You actually have to pass Tom. Well, he lives nearby. He's not on 14.
Tom, you'll have to ID again. N6CLX.
Like mud. Question we have to acknowledge. I mean, he just keeps coming in.
Brother-in-law does. He say something that knows he'll spark the other guy to come back in. He gets a kick out of that.
I keep thinking Tom's there. I only got another 10 minutes to get home.
Got maybe that or a little less. So you live on the north end of 14.
I'm actually cutting across on 414 because I was at Donaldson and I came up Whitehorse Road for some strange, weird, bizarre reason. And there's the guy just stopping in the middle of the road.
Down here in the... I guess it's the south end. Yeah, the real south end is Malden and, well, it's what, Malden and, I guess, Simpsonville. I don't know.
Down towards Paddo Shields. The 4OSH.
Sir? This is Scott, KD9MKR. I just thought I'd say hello and say we got to get together one of these days and talk website.
Do you really want a website? I posed that question to Johnny. Because you know there's such a thing as not having a website. Or we can change the website. I don't really care. But yes, you're right. We do need to talk about that at some point.
Well, you're available. You've got my number. Maybe this weekend or something if you want to give me a buzz. And we can kind of get back on it. I've been a little delinquent. Anyway, just give me a buzz when you get a chance.
Okay, definitely can't do it this weekend. I'm going to be in Chattanooga. For part of it, at least. Don't really have a solid schedule yet. I've been trying to work on that.
Whenever you're available, just give me a buzz, and we can get back onto it. And I just wanted to say hello. So I'll let you get tutting. Take care. KD9MKR, clear.
Okay, Scott. Thank you. We'll catch you later.
All right, Wyatt. Well, I think I'm going to get out of here. Good to meet you. N6CLX.
Nice chatting with him. Maybe we'll catch you some other time. I'll try and remember to turn that ham side of the radio on. Get it for CTD Mobile.
No problem. I'm leaving it right here. Seems to be the only radioactive repeater in the area, or at least mostly radioactive. N6CLX on clear.